open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
And right you are, Dave. One more time, it's time to peer into the Twilight Zone with most of our usual gang. Here to introduce the gang and tonight's program, your host, Bobby Neer. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Dan. Hello, everybody. I'm Bobby Neer, welcoming you to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone. Normally, about this time, I say that we are all here and ready to go, but tonight I can't do that. Both Kitty and Lynn are here, but it seems that our essential and beloved co-host, Ken, was hijacked by his wife and forced to take a cruise to Mexico, where we presume he is this evening, probably sitting on the deck of his ship, sipping a drink in near tears over the fact that he's missing this show. Nevertheless, he left behind some choice comments about the two episodes that we are discussing this evening. Both Kitty and Lynn will read those along with emails from Deborah, one of our loyal listeners. So let us get started with episode number 11, titled "And When the Sky Was Open," and Kitty will tell us just what happened after it was. Kitty?
Okay. Well, this episode starts off where you see an astronaut coming into a hospital after he's returned from a space mission, and he's gone to see one of the people that was on his flight. And he tells the person in the hospital room that their other compatriot on the flight has disappeared. And the guy says, "I don't know who you're talking about." And he says, "Don't you remember? There were three of us." And he said, "No, there was only two of us." And he looks at the newspaper. There's only two of them in the picture of the spacemen that have returned. And the man, played by Rod Taylor, says, "No, it's not true. Yesterday there were three of us in this room, and there were three hospital beds. And I and the other man, we got discharged. We left." And they went to a bar. And his compatriot in the bar all of a sudden started to act very strange. He looked in the mirror, and then he got up and he walked over to the phone booth to make a phone call, and he tried to call his parents. Well, his parents were completely clueless as to who this person was that was calling him. And then he says to Rod Taylor, "You know, maybe something went wrong. Maybe we weren't supposed to be here." And Rod Taylor thinks he's just kind of not feeling well, and so he goes over to get a drink, and when he comes back to the phone booth, the guy's gone. And so then he says to people in the bar, "Well, where's my friend?" And they're all saying, "What friend? You came in here alone." And so this is not good. So he is trying to find his friend. And he goes to see, he goes back to his hotel. He calls his former commanding officer who trained the both of them, and his former CO has absolutely no idea who he's talking about. His girlfriend shows up, and she says that she doesn't know who he's talking about. And then he goes back to the bar, hoping that maybe he'll be there, but he's not there. So that brings us to the present with the other gentleman in the room. And the gentleman says, "I'm sorry, I really don't know who you're talking about." And then all of a sudden, Rod Taylor looks in the mirror and doesn't see a reflection, and he runs out of the room. And then the third guy, who's still in the hospital, gets up to run out, and he says, "Where's my friend?" And the nurse says, "What are you talking about? There's nobody here but you." And then he looks in at the newspaper, and he sees that it's just himself in the picture. And then all of a sudden, he looks in the mirror, and he doesn't see himself, and he disappears. And the episode ends. where the nurse is telling the doctor that they've got an empty room so they can bring some patients in. And the spacecraft that had been retrieved by NASA is now gone. So here is what Ken had to say about this. He said, "My fellow Twilight Zone reviewers, what was that? Three men recover from a crash landing. Slowly one disappears. Then another is gone. Then the third one is missing. Three empty beds, and the spacecraft is vanished. Whoopee. Another ghostly look on a man's face opening. Rod Taylor in the lead role was wasted here. Lovely girl at the bar contributed nothing. Beer falling on floor shocks the audience. Awful story is too nice of a word here. Dud and flop are better words. Terrible, dreadful, deplorable, and appalling episode." He said it was a zero rating. And from Deborah, she said, "I never understood this show. Why were they there, and why did they keep disappearing? I couldn't find any emotion or feelings for any of these guys. Who were they, and why didn't anyone else seem to care, including the guy who called his house only to find out that they didn't know who he was? The whole show left me emotionless." Well, I just have to say that I completely disagree with both Ken and Deborah. I liked this episode. In fact, when I reviewed it, I gave it a 4 rating. To me, it's what the Twilight Zone is all about. Unexpected, creepy, and questioning reality at the end. That's the Twilight Zone. That's the dimension that you're venturing into. If you want reality, tune on another show. I thought it was well done. It was certainly a story that leaves you questioning things, and I think that was the point of it, that you didn't know what happened. I think it kind of played into the idea that perhaps they landed maybe on the wrong Earth. They were in the wrong universe. Perhaps they got sucked back to where they were supposed to be. Aliens kidnapped them. Who knows? But that's part of the fun of the Twilight Zone. And in fact, this episode, I don't know if anyone out there was a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation, but that show actually did a variation on this episode that I thought was very well done as well. So, you know, what makes the Twilight Zone such a great show for me is that the sky's the limit, and the best part is that you don't necessarily have to have a nice, tidy little wrapped-up resolution at the end of it. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Lynn.
I'm sorry, Kitty. Oh, my. But since Ken is not here tonight, I'm going to have to give a big groan in his honor for this one. This was absolutely one of the most strange and pointless zone episodes I've ever seen. Yeah, Rod Serling says in his opening narration that these three guys crash-landed their aircraft in the Mojave Desert after a 31-hour flight. But what was the purpose of the flight other than something experimental? Why were they there, and why did they keep disappearing one after the other with no real connection to anyone in the real world? Harrington's family didn't even know who he was, and Major Gart never heard of him, even though he was supposed to have flown with him. When they were all gone at the end, he never knew where they went or why. But then again, I don't think many viewers even cared. I felt no emotion for any of them. This was an episode I could have done without. Rod Taylor is a very good actor, and so is Charles Sadman, but I never cared for James Hutton. He always reminded me of someone who belonged on the old Ozzie and Harriet TV show, Leave It to Beaver or Happy Days or something, but that's how I felt about this episode.
All right, you gave it a 1 in the poll.
Yeah, generously.
Yeah, well, I can only say this. I certainly don't agree with Ken. I can think of episodes that are a lot worse than this. So I can't come down on it that hard. I mean, he's really giving a hard time about it. It kept me awake, and yet I didn't like the idea that there was no real answer at the end. Now, I don't always require an answer at the end of a story, although it is better that way, in my opinion, because I depend on the writer to come up with the idea and to write the story. So it's only natural that I expect the writer to finish it out at the end and tell me what it's all about. So you always have a problem with me if you just kind of leave a story hanging in the middle of nowhere. And that's the problem that I have with this. And even today, I mean, I didn't go back and watch it because I remember it, but I still don't get it. I mean, I like some of Kitty's ideas about them being in some sort of alternate universe, but it doesn't show that. It's just kind of just like the half an hour ends, and you're wondering what it was all about, and you really don't know what it's all about, and that's the problem that I have with it. There is a certain, Kitty mentioned the creepiness about it, and I agree. It is a little creepy any time. You know, if it hadn't been for the fact that people were telling them, I don't know who you are, for a while there, I thought the idea was going to be that they had gone up into space, and they had all come back alive, but in reality they were not supposed to come back alive. There was some sort of glitch or something, and they came back, and now they were supposed to have died. And they died one by one after they got back. So I was going to come on here and say, well, then that was the whole thing. But if people don't even recognize them at all, then I can't buy into that theory. So that doesn't work. I have a question for Kitty. I've never watched that Star Trek, in that story, was there a resolution at the end of why it was happening?
Oh, yeah, there was. Yeah, because what it was that you had the ship's doctor, Dr. Crusher. She didn't realize it, but she actually did get sucked into some type of a parallel. It was either a parallel universe or it was some type of time portal, but everybody on the Enterprise was disappearing, and she was the only one who had any memories of them. And so it was actually, it was sort of a takeoff on this episode, but kind of in reverse, whereas the people were disappearing, but she was remembering everybody, but nobody else was remembering them. So it was an interesting episode.
So there was some sort of resolution.
Yeah, there was. I mean, eventually she did get back to where she was supposed to be.
Right.
And, you know, and that's certainly something that I thought about with this episode, was that, you know, did these guys end up just getting pulled back to where they were supposed to be? This is one of those episodes where it's, you know, the viewer gets to basically decide what they think happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a mystery, certainly, to say the least. And I liked it. I, you know, I like sometimes having these endings that have question marks.
So your theory on this one is what, that they were indeed in the wrong universe?
Yeah, that's one of the theories, yeah, that they were indeed in the wrong universe, or, you know, there's always the other option that, you know, they got beamed up by space aliens, and it was, you know, and the aliens erased everybody's memories of them. I mean,
all right, well,
you know,
the sky's
the limit. What, you know, what you think happened.
Let me ask Lynn a question. Lynn, if that's true, if indeed that had been the answer at the end, that they were in an alternate universe, do you think that the episode would have been improved if we had actually seen them in that alternate universe right at the end?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
It would have had some kind of closure to it.
We could have taken something from that then.
I had some closure to it, but there was no closure. I didn't think there was any closure to it.
Exactly.
I mean, you gave it a zero rating. I generously gave it a one, but, you know, it just, I don't know.
Well, I gave it a 2.5, which is a little bit...
Oh, you did? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you gave it a zero.
No.
I wanted closure, and I didn't get any.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And before we run out of time, before the break, I just want to say something about... You mentioned the actors. I don't generally... of course, those are actors who were seen all the time back in the 60s. I don't like much of any of them, actually. I never really did like Rod Taylor very much, except in The Birds and The Time Machine. Those are the two movies I thought he did pretty good. In other ones, he used to annoy me. And you're right about Jim Hutton. He was like a non-entity in everything he was in.
He looked like he should have been in some kind of like 60s TV show. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
I've never heard anybody agree with me on that. And it's kind of odd, because he seemed to kind of bore me in everything he was in. He just brought the episode down. And I can't remember. I haven't been to IMDb. I'll go there later tonight.
I never liked
him. He ever really did anything all that important during his career.
No, I never liked him.
I don't think so. And Charles Aitman, of course, was in everything. I mean, he was just one of those.
Well, isn't he the narrator on the new Twilight Zone series? The 80s series? He was the narrator.
I don't know. I'll take a look at that. All righty, we're up against the break, and we'll be back with another episode. Dan, break time.
And right it is, Bob. 15 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned for part two of Talking Twilight Zone.
Hey everybody, Susan McCrae, host of Getting to Know You. My next guest is a friend of mine, Penny McQueen, but she's not only my friend, she's an experienced technology executive, she's publisher, webmaster, and main contributor to the High Chaparral newsletter, working on the next High Chaparral reunion, she's a writer, and she's also a scuba diver, swimming with the sharks. Well, you'll hear about that and much more when Penny McQueen joins me on the next Getting to Know You. Tuesday evening, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, on KSAV.org. Share a Vision Radio.
And I, too, want to learn about Penny swimming with the sharks. But right now, we need to learn more about the Twilight Zone. And here's Bob.
Thank you, Dan. Everybody knows Las Vegas to be one of the great fun places on Earth. Fun, that is, until and unless you lose your shirt gambling there. But what if you really don't like it and have no interest in gambling, and you're just dragged there by your wife who happened to win the trip in a contest? Surely there's no danger that way. You won't gamble anything. You'll probably just go eat in the buffets and have a good time. Well, not necessarily, as a man named Franklin Gibbs finds out when he catches the fever so badly in Las Vegas that a slot machine comes to life and starts following him around. We will have a special guest that night, one of our group members, Helen Weathers from England. She just happens to be vacationing in Las Vegas that week, and she will be live on the air with us for the entire program, letting us know if she too is being stalked by any slot machines. When she joins us, she will only have been there for about a day, because as anyone knows, you only need to be there for less than an hour to lose it all. All five of us catch the fever 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Twilight Zone. One additional note, please make sure you stay with KSAV after this program. 30 minutes after this one ends, Perfectly Frank will be on. Always a great program, but better than ever tonight because one of our own is on it. That's right. Lynn Carpenter will be the guest DJ on Perfectly Frank this evening. Part one finds her picking out and playing her favorite Sinatra songs from 10 down to 6. Part 2, next week at the same time, finds her picking out number 5 down to number 1. Good luck to Lynn. Don't miss it. Better than ever, tonight, Perfectly Frank, even more perfect than usual, 1/2 hour after this program ends. Back to Business, episode number 12 tonight, titled What You Need, in which a creepy little tale about a meek little old street vendor with an uncanny knack for coming up with the right things at the right time, but sometimes for the wrong people. Here is the aforementioned Lynn with her summary, and Ken's and Deborah's comments as well. Lynn?
Hey, thanks, Bobby, and thanks for the promo for Perfectly Frank. Well, What You Need is one of the more outstanding and poignant episodes that actually had an ending that probably had most viewers yelling, "All right," at their TV sets. It starts out with a sweet, lovable, adorable little old man who worked as a peddler and who only wanted to help people by giving them what they needed at the exact moment when they needed it. His misfortune was to enter a bar one night and encounter a nasty thug named Fred Renard, who saw how this sweet old man named Pidot gave two people exactly what they needed. Pidot just knew what people needed. A washed-up ball player was given a bus ticket to Scranton, Pennsylvania, and laughed about it being useless until he got a phone call at the bar with an offer to coach a team in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Before that, Pidot gives the woman a bottle of spot remover, and she then uses it to help the ball player remove a spot from his jacket so he can look decent for his new job interview. Renard, the creep, takes this all in and sees that the peddler has a special power of some sort. He follows him out of the bar and begins to strong-arm him into giving him what he needs. So he's given a pair of scissors. He doesn't understand until his scarf is caught in an elevator door and he's almost strangled until he uses the scissors to cut himself free. After that, he shows up at the peddler's apartment uninvited and demands more. The old man is scared, so he gives in to Renard by giving him a leaky pen that leaks onto the racing section of a newspaper, which causes Renard to win a lot of money from the horse whose name it leaked onto. He still wanted more, so when Pidot realized that Renard was going to kill him, he finally gave him one last gift, a pair of tight shoes that Renard thought would take him to someplace good. Instead, it was a rainy night, and Renard realized that the shoes were too tight and too slippery. He started across the street to get his revenge on Padot, but slipped on the wet street and was mowed down by a car that just kept on going. Before Renard was killed, though, Padot told him that those shoes weren't what Renard needed, but were certainly what he himself needed. Steve Cochran and Ernest Truex played their roles brilliantly. I loved this episode for the story and performances, and I gave it a classic 5 rating. Well, we have 2 short emails to read for this one tonight. The first one is from our own dear Ken, who I hope is having a great vacation with his wife. And Ken says, Steve Cochran was a perfect choice to play the part of the thug. Who would want to be alone with him in a dark alley? At any moment, he may take your head off. He forces old man Padot again and again. He is not content until he gets everything. Is Rod Serling trying to teach all of us a lesson in life? Great casting of Ernest Truex in the lead role as a gentle but nervous old man helping people in need. He senses danger and his own life and gives Renard slippery shoes, which lead to his death. I did not see that coming. All in all, a true Twilight Zone feel and startling ending. Kept me guessing and scared me, which is hard to do. My rating is a classic 5. Oh, you are tough to scare, Ken, and a tough critic as well, so thanks for the email. And another email from our newest and very enthusiastic member, Debbie Arkin. Debbie says, this show left me with a lot of emotion. I felt so sorry for the little old peddler who lived only to do good and was being bullied by that thug. The peddler tried to help this guy, but he was never satisfied. If someone found a way to get me money and other things to make my life better, I'd be thrilled. Michael Douglas once said in the movie, greed is good. The thug found out in the end that it wasn't. Thanks for the great email, Debbie. Keep them coming because they're always appreciated. And you are right, greed is not good. It usually leads to unhappiness in life. Donald Trump might disagree, but I really don't know how happy he is, even with all of his billions of dollars. So, over to you, Bob.
All right, let's find out. Before I send it over to Kitty, let me just say that Ken gave it a 5. I gave it a 5. You gave it a 5. But Kitty gave it a 3. And that's just about the opposite of the way it usually is. Usually Kitty's pretty easy on episodes, and we're usually down around 2, 1, and 0. So I don't know why she didn't give it a 5, but there's no better time to find out, like right now, Kitty.
I had actually forgotten that I gave that a 3.
You did.
Well, you know, I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was very well done. It didn't really strike me as a knock your socks off type of episode, though. You know, to me, it seemed like just a really good Twilight Zone episode. It didn't, you know, I did have, you know, I know that Ken said that he wasn't expecting the man to give those shoes to the thug. But I had a feeling early on that this greedy guy was going to basically end up dead by the end of the episode. So that really didn't surprise me that much. I mean, he was basically on that course because he was never content with anything that he got. So it seemed basically to me a fitting ending. There wasn't any big, to me it just wasn't that big of a surprise. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I can't really say that I hated anything about it. And I thought the ending was actually very cute because Lynn forgot this part. At the very, very end, the police are there and reporters are there and these innocent bystanders are all out there and one guy is standing there. And Padot all of a sudden just hands the guy a comb. And he's like, oh, what do I need a comb for? And he's just like, oh, I just think you need that comb. And then all of a sudden a reporter's there and wants to take his picture. And his wife says, oh, you need to comb your hair. And so he takes out the comb and he combs his hair. I thought that was actually a very cute ending.
I actually was going to mention that, but I had that in my summary, and I decided no, because I didn't want my summary to go too long. But yeah, that was a great ending.
Well, Lynn, did you actually see that ending coming? Because I didn't.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I thought something bad was going to happen to him, but I thought it was going to be, I thought he was going to live, but something bad was going to happen to him instead of him dying.
Well, I basically liked the episode. I think I liked it more the first time I saw it. It's one of those stories that's good the first time you see it, but The Twilight Zone, of course, gets repeated over and over. It's only 50 years old. And once you know the ending, it has a little less impact when you're watching it and you know where it's going. So I can't say that when I gave it a 5 pretty much based on what I thought about it when I watched it in 1959. Because I think when you know what the ending is going to be, that detracts a lot from it. Of course, that's not their fault. That's true of a lot of things. But what I like about it the most, it's just imaginative. It's an imaginative story. It doesn't take the easy way out, and it does keep you guessing at the outset. And and visually, it's an interesting story too, because at the beginning, when I don't know, are all the people in a restaurant or a bar? I don't remember.
In a bar.
Okay, and they're the life's worst losers. Everybody's got a problem. You know, they're just the biggest bunch of losers in the world. And so the little man with all the answers is in the right place, for sure. And I like that aspect of it, and I like the ending where he confronts the potential killer out in the street. There's nobody around, the streets are wet, it's dark, and it's kind of creepy out. So that kind of stuff, you know, are the things that really appeal to me. As far as the basic story itself, I mean, it reminds me, actually, in a much different way, of the movie It's a Wonderful Life, because in that movie, of course, guardian angel, Clarence, I believe is his name, mm-hmm. Saves Jimmy Stewart's life when he decides to commit suicide.
That's right.
He has the answers for everything, too. And so this little man here is kind of like a guardian angel to everybody in the bar or everybody he confronts in the streets. It's kind of curious to me that he doles out these little trinkets like a pen and this and that, but nobody ever questions why it's not costing anything. I mean, that would have been the first question out of my mouth. I would have said, okay, how much is this pen? Or how much is this, how much is that? Instead, he just gives it to them, and they go, okay, doesn't make any sense, but I guess I'll take it anyway.
Actually, he never took anybody's money.
I got the impression on that was that he was a peddler, and I got the impression that he normally did sell things, but when he came across people who really, really needed something, then he would just give it to them.
Okay, well, I never thought of it that way. You would think he would say to them, that's okay, no charge.
Yeah, he never took anyone's money.
Not that I can remember, no.
But if you'll remember, though, towards the end, when that thug came up to him, he actually was on the street, you know, peddling his wares.
That's true.
So I got the impression, I mean, because obviously he had to eat and pay his rent. So I just got the impression that he, you know, to an average Joe, maybe who came up to him and just wanted to buy something, and maybe he didn't sense that they had any earth-shaking problems in their lives, that he would just sell it to them.
But yeah, because he mostly sold, like, matches and shoelaces and, like, nothing of any worth, really.
Right.
The episode also gets a lot out of the casting. There's good casting in here.
Excellent.
Especially by Steve Cochran. He's from, like, back in the 40s. So he was before even my time. But if you look at some old movies from back then, he was, like, in the original Untouchables and things like that. He always played a hood, a tough guy, somebody who was dangerous. So he's just sitting there at the bar. And you already know when you see him sitting there, he's glancing out the sides, and he's looking skeptically at all what's going on, and decides, how come all these people are getting all this stuff, and I'm getting nothing out of this? So you know right then that he's the troublemaker. It was a little weird to have him wearing that long scarf, because you wouldn't think a guy like that would be wearing a long scarf around his neck like that.
And why
it was a little inappropriate, but he had to wear it in order to get caught in the elevator.
And why didn't he just turn it around the other side and pull it out off
well,
of
then,
his neck?
Then you don't have a story.
That's
all
right.
That's our show for tonight. Thanks to everybody. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll all be in Las Vegas, sort of, and Ken will be back. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Bob, and thanks for loaning us Lynn to host the Perfectly Frank show tonight. Look forward to that in just 30 minutes on Share a Vision Radio.